Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freund Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
And welcome to Nintendo Voice Chat Presents Talk of the Kingdom. That's what we're calling the show. We're sticking with it, and we love it. I'm your host, Brian Altano, along with my incredible crew of Zelda obsessives. Rebecca Valentine.
Who am I?
Tom Marks.
Whoa.
Jada Griffin.
That's not my name.
What?
I'm kidding.
What? Tripping me up here. This week on Talk of the Kingdom, we had originally planned on doing a spoiler cast for the full game. This episode, we're not. A funny thing happened. Most of us, and most of you actually, don't want to finish this game. It's super fun, and I don't want to get to the end yet. Tom did for work. He did for review and for fun because he enjoyed
it.
But we're going to do a few more episodes of Talk of the Kingdom. We're going to extend the show. I know a lot of you have been asking for that. Frankly, there's not really a lot else going on in Nintendo World or Nintendo Land right now. So Talk of the Kingdom it is. We're going to keep talking about this game, celebrating the game in general. We're going to stay away from spoiler stuff about the ending until we're ready. We will announce in a few weeks when we're ready for that. But until then, let's just talk about Zelda. Speaking of which, today we are talking about our funniest moments in Tears of the Kingdom, the most difficult battles, the difficulty in general, the secret leveling system in Tears of the Kingdom, and our favorite armor sets so far. But first, Tears of the Kingdom has been out for several weeks now, and apologies to other games, but we're completely obsessed with it. And we're going to talk about some adventure stories, how it's impacting our personal lives, our ability to do our jobs and everything else. But yeah, so I can't stop playing this game. I can't put it down. I can't stop thinking about it. Other games have just come out. Diablo, as of the time of this recording, Street Fighter VI just launched. Lots of games come to Switch every single day. Hundreds, possibly.
Yeah. People still playing a Star Wars game.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of stuff. I
dropped a Star Wars game 4 hours in. I love Star Wars. Like, I am completely obsessed with Tears of the Kingdom. I cannot stop thinking about it. Tom, I know you did that already. You had 2 full weeks of just nonstop obsession.
Just for a moment. Just picture. Let me send you back to a world. Picture okay. This. Me just alone in my living room for 2 weeks, discovering all of the stuff that y'all have been discovering.
Uh-huh.
And having like 2 other human beings on the planet to talk about it with.
Right.
Brendan Graber and I feel like we are war buddies now. we were just constantly talking about this game where we would constantly swap stories about stuff we'd found or all these things. And it was this outlet that I'm so glad I had with him, because now you know.
Right.
There's so much, it's so much joy in just being like finding these things and sharing what other people have found. And
the yeah. social element around this in general, even like the builds and stuff like that, has been such a huge part of the game for many of us.
Yeah.
Talking with each other. The show is named after communication around this game. Like you had Silence of the Kingdom for yeah. a couple of weeks there.
I Island Princess, if you will.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I had a few people. Brendan and I definitely went through it together, and then Casey I was also able to talk to, and Mitchell and Ronnie were like kind of watching along, making stuff as I was playing. So mm-hmm. it was fun to do that. But yeah, it's been an absolute joy to just watch the world sort of slowly understand and come to terms with how big this game is and
right.
how much there is. And yeah, it's just been a blast to see people having fun with it.
But you've done something we haven't given ourselves the opportunity to do yet. You've played other video games.
Yeah. I played Humanity, which is not on Switch, but that was like my wind down game after Zelda.
I haven't even seen Humanity since this game
came out. I played that game for like 2 hours. The day before Tears of the Kingdom came
right.
out, because we got, I think, some early codes or something.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed it. I was like, oh, this is really cool. I would love to play more of this. Well, too bad. Time to load up Zelda.
Yeah, the thing is with Tears of the Kingdom, it's just so massive and there's so much stuff to do, and not in like a, not to throw them under the bridge, but not like in a kind of Ubisoft open world kind of way where there's just
checklist.
Like all these, yeah, there's a bunch of dots that I have to go to on the
yeah.
map, right? Like there's stuff that I want to do, and on the road to doing those things, I find other things that I didn't know were there, and it's mm-hmm. constantly pulling threads, and then I just love the entire experience of it. Like it's overwhelming, but also really exciting and really rewarding, and it's making it so I don't want to play anything else. Like I know if I jump into another video game right now, I will try to ascend, and it won't work, and I'll get angry and I'll put it down.
So after the PlayStation showcase and they showed off Dragon's Dogma 2, I went and loaded up the first Dragon's Dogma because I was like, I want to revisit this world and check it out. And I went into one of the cities. I went into Grand Sorin, the main city, and I was running through this burrow and I went under this bridge and I was like, oh, I'm playing way too much Tears of the Kingdom. I want to ascend through this bridge,
right?
Get up to this next floor. I don't want to run around and figure out how to get up on this bridge. I just want to use ascend.
Yeah.
It's broken my brain.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculous.
I'm dreaming about this game. Uh-huh. Like, it's invading my dreams. It's messing up my sleep schedule. Like,
yep.
I think I've said on here before that I've taken up coffee. I'm staying up later than usual. My partner and I actually had a serious conversation about it this morning. It's like, okay, we got to start going to bed on time and, like play this like a normal video game. So I think we're probably going to pair
Red,
back a
this
little
is
bit.
Not a normal video
I know,
game.
I know.
We had a discussion about addiction in our house. We're working on it.
There are extenuating circumstances when it comes to a game of this caliber.
Uh-huh.
There are. But I did dream of, I've dreamed about it multiple nights, but I had the most clear dream about it I've had in a while the other night. I was in a shrine, like a real life shrine. I was just in it. And there was like the statues and everything. And it was very clearly a shrine, but the whole, and there was like a pipe puzzle or something, but the whole thing was decked out like, like a mall mini golf course, like with retro carpeting and black lights for some reason. Also, there was
a guy
in there who was like, I'm a vampire. And I'm like, what?
Was he selling like sunglasses, like at like a sunglasset? Like,
no, he wasn't. He was just there. I don't know. It was a bunch of dreams are weird things.
There's no sun down there. So that's a good place for a vampire to be, right?
Yeah, because it was just black light.
They just have that weird gel ceiling in every shrine that you're not allowed to go through.
Yeah. There is another mini golf shrine in this.
Another one?
There is a golf shrine. Just like they had Breath of the Wild had a golf shrine.
Wait, I think I've done that one.
It's just not motion controlled this time.
Thank goodness.
I think it was last week we talked about the baseball shrine, and then I looked to social media. You know the one with the where you build the bat and you smack the ball. And like people hate that shrine.
Yeah, that's really surprised people had so much issues with that one.
People have a lot of feelings towards that shrine. It was like that one and the one where you have to bring the ball up the ramp. I think you were tweeting about this yesterday.
Yes, because someone posted what I think
the way to do it
to be
right?
the actual solution.
Where
you make like this paddle wheel that moves up the they're like these little like bars kind of stair stepping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It basically pushes the platform with the ball on it up. And that's the same shrine that has the paddle boats that I also talked about on the show a while back that I miserably failed at designing. Mm-hmm. And I realize now the reason why I failed at designing a paddle boat is because I didn't understand the previous puzzle was paddle boats.
That shrine felt like when you move by yourself. You know, like you go into a new apartment and it's like on
one's helping you.
It's on the second or third floor and you drag a couch up the steps. Like I went to the top of that thing and just dragged that ball like up each thing. It was like, until I got to the top.
So your water shrine with the ball, what I ended up doing, I built a very tall, just like, or very long bridge basically and attached the ball to the end.
Uh-huh.
I stood it up, climbed up the ladder and then grabbed the ball and just dragged it.
Amazing.
All the way across instead of building a boat or anything.
See, this is what, like, if you just track the last, 8 minutes on this show, we go in here with talking points and we will get to them. We'll get to the actual topics. But just like this game, like, we start on one thing and then, like, 12 minutes later, we're just like, yeah, anyway. And did you meet the horse fairy? Like, it's just like, how do we get here? It's so funny. Anyway, yes, we're all obsessed with this game. I know you are too if you're listening to this. If you're not, I promise you, like, we will get to other Nintendo games eventually. We will.
Will we?
Yes.
Yeah, debatable.
Pikmin 3 comes out later this year.
Pikmin 4 comes out later.
Sorry, Pikmin 4, excuse me. Yeah.
Baton Kaitos is this summer, people.
That's right. That's right.
Reb, is Baton Kaitos really going to pull you away from Tears of the Kingdom?
I'm hoping to be done.
Done.
See, there you go.
What does done mean?
Yeah.
Well,
does done mean in a Zelda?
With Breath of the Wild, I reviewed it for a site like ages ago. I reviewed it, so I did all the memories, I did all the dungeons, and I completed the story. And then after that, I was really tired. And I needed to put it down.
Right.
So I did, and then when the DLC came out, I finished all the rest of the shrines. I did all of the DLC. I did a couple other side quests that were interesting to me, and then I finished Tarrytown. And I took Link, I dressed him up in the little green garb that you get for doing all of the shrines in Breath of the Wild. I put him on the hill overlooking the rebuilt Tarrytown, and I turned the game off, and I did not pick it up again.
Hmm.
And that is, I know people are going to be playing Tears of the Kingdom for a long time, but that's actually the same kind of experience I want out of this game.
Like, you want a closing point.
Yeah, and it's going to be, but I'm going to do all the shrines, I'm going to do significant side quests, I'm going to do like various other things, the dungeons, the tiers, all these other things, and then, but there is, I know, going to be a point where I'm going to say, all right, I have gotten what I wanted out of this, and I'm going to put him somewhere, and I'm going to close it, and then I'll pick it back up again. Hoping there's DLC. Really think there's going to be DLC.
Yeah, and we will talk about that soon as well. Thank you all for those incredible tales of adventure and obsession. I wanted to talk a bit about some of like the funnier things that have happened to us in this game so far. Tom and I joked about this a few weeks ago. We both independently cited like Looney Tunes as sort of a connection here. I've seen a lot of people on social media talk about how just Wile E. Coyote this game is. I had a thing that happened to me the other day where I wanted it to become morning and it was night, and I set a campfire, you know, where you throw down some wood, light it on fire, went to sit down next to it, literally sat down, and it was just like, do you want to make it nighttime? And one of those large rocks from the sky fell right on my head and just smacked me and knocked me out. And it was just like, to me, it felt like when, you know, when you sit down on the couch after a long day of working and you go, okay. And you look at your phone and like an email pops up and you're like, damn it. You're like, you're ready to relax. And all of a sudden it knocks you out. I was cackling because I didn't actually, I've seen those things fall all around me and I didn't know it could actually hit you. And Reb, I told you this story yesterday and you were like, oh my God, thank you. I didn't know those things could actually hurt you.
Yeah, I assumed there was like a little, you know, a game development bubble of protection around your character that would let you not get hit by them.
No, apparently.
That's really funny.
Yeah, they will get you. Have any of you ever been hit by those sky rocks?
No, never come close.
Really?
I've had one that fell down as I was like flying up with a device and I jumped off my device and jumped on the rock and recalled the rock to go up.
Oh,
and
that's
like, forget my terrible creation because it probably wasn't going to go as high as
awesome.
That rock was. So, but no, I haven't been crushed yet.
Jada, has anything like very funny happened to you playing this game?
I guess it would probably be I was being frugal. I'm very frugal in my games. I don't like to spend resources. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing in Breath of the Wild / Tears of the Kingdom. But I built a balloon, very standard balloon. And then I threw some campfire in the base to light on fire instead of putting a flame emitter. I only had like, I think, 8 flame emitters at this point, which is more than enough.
What are you saving them for?
Crazy things I want to build.
Hot air balloons.
Yes. And so I built a hot air balloon. I threw some fire. I threw two bundles of wood on there. So okay. I was like, this is, two bundles of wood is better than one bundle of wood for raising a hot air balloon, obviously. And so I threw one of those little fire fruits or whatever, and it lit on fire, and the fire spread to me and killed me immediately. I only had like half a heart, and I was like, this will be fine. It's not going to light me on fire. And I burned myself to death. So,
I'm sorry for laughing at that.
I had a good time. I had a good laugh out of it, too. I was like, I'm an idiot. That's just the way it works sometimes.
You're not an idiot, but sometimes, you know, it things happen to Link that are not expected in this game. And he gets hurt. And like, that's when I'm glad he doesn't talk, but that's when I'm really glad he doesn't talk. Because I feel like he would turn to the camera and be like, you idiot. What did you do to me? Tom, you played a ton of this game reviewing it, and you played some of it since. Anything like really funny happened to you that like you didn't put in our review, or anything during that whole process?
I definitely put some of my funny moments in the review.
Besides the dumping a Korok into a hole at the end.
Yeah, there's a clip in that review of that's like makes me look very dumb, but is like genuinely the first time I was kind of like building more complex vehicles, and I was trying to build a car that was just a single wheel, and because I, you know, why not? And it kept falling over, so I put a stabilizer on the back of the wheel, and I was like, okay, I just got to stabilize it, and I hit it, and it popped up, and that also turned on the wheel, so it just immediately drove away from me, and I was like running after it. That was very silly. I
can't tell you how many times I've started a vehicle on accident, and it just takes off without me, because I'm like, oh.
That happens so, and you scramble to pull up the rewind thing, and you're like, get back here.
Yeah, I'll be building things in the depths to get around the depths, and I'll throw one of the bloom seeds on it instead of using like a light because they didn't have lights at first, and I throw a bloom seed on it and it would activate it and it would drive off. I was like, oh, that counted.
I've had moments, you know, that joke with the like the barrel full of bricks and the guy with the rope where like pulls it up and then it flings him up and then the barrel breaks and then he falls and it falls. I've had moments like that where like I've built a little hot air balloon to get a Korok up a mountain, and then I will like, as it's going up, I missed the mountain. So like I dropped the Korok off the cliff and I was like, ah, dang it. So I jumped down to get the Korok, and then I got too far away. So the flamethrower for the balloon turns off. So then it comes down and just lands right on my head after me. there's a ton of little just like slapstick moments like that. I can't remember if I told this. I don't think I told this on NVC. I think I told this on when I was on Cat Bailey's podcast, Blood for the Blood God, Acts of the Blood God. Blood for the Blood God is a Warhammer thing.
How much more blood does this Blood God need?
Where I think I told this on the story on that podcast that was, and this is no spoilers, I had beaten the final boss. It was the first time I beat the final boss. I didn't die. It was super hard. I was super proud of myself. And then I respawned at Lookout Landing afterwards just to play more. and it was raining, and I was like kind of reveling in the moment, and I took two steps out and then got zapped by lightning and instantly died.
That happened to me yesterday, minus the beating the final boss thing.
Yeah.
Like I loaded up the game in Lookout Landing from where I had been playing the other day and just immediately blammo.
Yeah, it was just like...
not even time to react or notice that it was lightning.
Yeah, it was just such a funny capstone off of the finale of the game. The credits had rolled. I was on this high, and then the game was like, by the way, you still suck. Get back down. You're like, oh, no. Oh, man.
Died over a stray breeze or something.
Yeah.
I was testing a bunch of different shield surfing things, and so I was testing the minecart down a hill from one of the towers, and I was like, and I knew I had metal on me. I was like, whatever, it's lightning. I was like, can I outrun the lightning in the minecart down a hill? No, you cannot. You cannot. I died immediately.
I had a situation where I was fighting a Gliok, and that's the one on the bridge that breathes fire, but the fire also like has some wind in it. Mm. And like they just repeatedly knock you off the bridge. And when you do, you ragdoll off of it. So you're like holding out your bow and arrow and you're like, all right, I got this. And you load up your little, you know, your Keys eyeball on there. It's got poison on it. You know, it's got +8 hurt for its face or whatever. And you shoot it. And then the Gliok's just like, nah, I hate you. And then flicks you off the mountain. You just go, there's no good way to get back up.
Yeah.
Cause it's just too far down. You can have your climbing gear on. You look like you just went shopping at REI and you go, and then it starts raining. And then you're like, I give up. And you just drown, respawn back on the bridge and fight the Gliok again. Reb, what about you? Anything funny happen?
Most of my humorous moments are due to human error. And hubris and foolishness and not recognizing that, like, if I keep doing the same dumb thing over and over, the same result is going to happen.
Yes.
I've had similar incidents of vehicles running away from me, except my version of this is that I'm at like a building pile or something, and I build a vehicle out of wood with some wheels on it, and then I get my sword out to activate it, and I just destroy the whole vehicle immediately.
Yeah.
I have done this so many times.
Those are classic moments.
Every time I know it's going to happen.
It's a Zelda rite of passage.
Why do I keep doing it again and again? I don't know.
I haven't had that happen to me yet.
Are you using arrows to start?
No, I literally use melee, but I've just never destroyed a vehicle. I don't know what about it. Like, I've just been lucky, I guess.
Better than me.
I had like a silver Lizalfos horn glued to my master sword, which is like one of the strongest things in the game, and went to start something and it just exploded.
Yes.
Like, don't do that.
The other thing that happened to me yesterday or 2 days ago was I was in one of those big like enemy camps, like with the fortress and everything. Yep. I was fighting with one of the little groups of monster hunters. So I have a bunch of allies and they're all kind of over in the corner fighting a big group, and I'm over here, and there's like a bokoblin that I take out, and they're all in a big pile, and I'm like, great, so I've got bombs, so I queue up a bomb to throw it at them, and I aim, and it just like barely gets out of my hand when a rock lands on my head.
Oh,
and,
right.
And the bomb explodes on me, so I'm confused, I don't know where the rock came from, so I queue up another bomb and get ready to throw, and then the exact same thing happens, and I get exploded on again, and I seriously like blew myself up 4 times because there was just a rock coming out of nowhere. And then I look, and there's all these bokoblins in front of me in a pile, and then the Hinox is right next to them just throwing rocks at
right.
me, looking directly at me. Like, no reason I should not have seen that thing throwing rocks at me, but we're just lobbing things at each other, and he's just better at me. So it was just this Looney Tunes things of like, over and over.
When you fight near Death Mountain or in the depths around Death Mountain, and the heat is so crazy that it makes bombs instantly explode.
Oh, that's fun.
I regularly forget that until I pull back again with the bow and arrow, and then you let it go, and it just goes... Which is so like Looney Tunes, you know, Acme cigar, like yes. Daffy Duck lights a cigar or whatever, and his head blows up. Like the amount of times that happens to me where I'm just like, who hit me with a bomb? And then I'm like, oh, I did.
I hit me
you
with
dolt.
A bomb.
I wanted to talk a little bit on the flip side about outside of the self-imposed difficulty of blowing yourself up or yeah. destroying your own cars, about difficulty in general in this game. Difficulty has always been a conversation around big open world games, video games in general. This game, I don't think is like significantly more difficult than your traditional Nintendo game, but I think it also scales well in the way some of their best games do, where it's pretty straightforward on the golden path, but if you want to dig around and do some tougher fights, that's there for you as well, right? Just like Kirby games start off easy, but if you want 100% them, like you're fighting in hell by the end. So how do we all feel about the general difficulty about Tears of the Kingdom and Zelda as a franchise as a whole?
I feel like Tears of the Kingdom is a little bit easier than Breath of the Wild for me so far, but I think that's mostly because of the absence of the Guardians.
Right.
Because I felt like I wouldn't say I had issue with the Guardians in the first one, but they burned through a lot of shields while I was perfecting the parry timing with their lasers.
Having a bunch of big enemies in the world that can one-shot you is not, it's not really a thing here anymore, right?
Yeah. So yeah. I think overall it's been pretty fine outside of my little mishap that where I went exploring a little too far under the castle and triggered some cutscenes.
We'll talk about that in a bit. Yeah.
Although overall, though, I think it's been fine. It's been a little, like I said, a little easier than Breath of the Wild for me.
Mm, interesting. I actually find, I think I pick fights more in this game. Oh, I mean, I did in Breath of the Wild too, but I feel like it's like the combat moment to moment is a little tougher because the enemies are a little smarter. There's a lot more that they do in terms of like grabbing things and doing things and bringing, they bring more, you know, guns to the knife fight here and there.
They got a lot more tricks up their sleeves.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's been interesting. And also like the depths are tougher. You know, it's kind of a hard mode down there, just in terms of like losing hearts and having like evil red enemies and stuff like that. But Tom, what about you? Like, how did you feel about the difficulty?
Yeah, it's so the one thing, I think one of the things that I miss most about the kind of older Zelda formula is that you can't just sort of you can never out-level it. When you have like the three-hit system or whatever, the one thing about this game is I think there are definitely real challenges to be had, but there's also the opportunity for you to just go do all of the shrines and have 40 hearts and 100 damage weapons and just sort of brute force your way through any problem.
Yeah.
Which I'm really glad about. I think that's good that those tools are there for people. But it does mean that like, even the hardest fight in this game, which I think there are some challenging fights, become more trivial as you get deeper in, right? Which is why I was disappointed that there, at least that I haven't found, is there isn't like the master mode, right, built into this.
Yeah,
that was DLC in Breath of the Wild, but a lot of the DLC things like, certain armor sets and the Hero's Path mode, where those were added later in Breath of the Wild and are here at the beginning. And so I was sad to see that there wasn't the Hero's Path or like the master mode in this.
Right.
But generally, there have been some fights in this game that I have been super impressed by how hard they are, right? Some of the Gliok fights, you and I were talking about one of the Colosseums that's just this like absolutely brutal kind of
the Lynel one.
Yeah, the Lynel one is just so challenging if you're not prepared for it. And I think that the other reason that people can have a lot of different difficulties with this game is if you're one of those people that will just farm fairies or make a million billion max health meals, right? and things that recover gloom is a lot less dangerous for you. But if you don't want to do sort of all that prep work, it still can be a challenge.
Yeah.
So your mileage may vary on difficulty because it really depends on how you're playing the game.
Well, that's exactly it. I think that there's a lot of stuff in the classic Zelda games that were enemies that had to be defeated using a specific item that was sort of bespoke to the area around them, right? And Tears of the Kingdom and Breath of the Wild, to a lesser extent, gives you all the tools, all the options, all the ability to interact with these conflicts in your own way. And that makes a much more interesting scenario because like you get to watch a video where someone is building a mech to kill a level one grunt, right? And you're like, that seems like needless cruelty, but have at it. Whereas in like classic Zelda games, like you basically like you had to use a hookshot to take off this thing's mask. And then afterwards you could chip away at it with your sword and stuff like that. And you had a limited tool set available to you kind of trickled out throughout the experience. I don't think they'll ever make a game tougher than Zelda 2, right? And that's a lot of that is because Zelda 2 is on a 2D path. It's a side scroller. And when an enemy comes up to you, you don't really have the option to like run around him. You could use your jump power and get over him and keep going. But a lot of those times, like you'll have to face it. And that's a sword fight. There's highs and lows, there's downward strikes and upward stabs and stuff like that, all the moves that end up in Smash Brothers. But now you would just have so many more options, and I guess like that means you could play without getting a single heart. right? Or using any potion. Like you could self inflict a bunch of rules that make this game the hardest game in the series, but that's not really intentional by design.
Yeah, I think we're going to see a lot of those damageless runs coming.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The speed run time is now under an hour. I think we're going to start seeing the no damage runs start to climb as well.
I mean, the swordless questing has been like a speed run thing for, or just an option, again, self-imposed, by the Zelda community since the first game, right? Like, they've been like, well, what if you didn't use the iconic weapon that Link holds the entire time? What if we just use bombs on Stalfos Knights?
Yeah, and they're currently in the process. I mean, it's still really early days for that speedrunning community, but I'm in their Discord kind of watching what's going on, and they're still in the process of figuring out like what their categories are going to be. Like, right. There's the obvious ones like any percent, but like, okay, what qualifies as beating the game? What rules are we putting around that? There's 100%, which is okay, what falls into that? What do you have to do that? But then speedrunning communities will come up with all sorts of fun other versions of categories. Like, I mean, all dungeons is maybe a pretty obvious one to do, but then there's, I don't know, there's going to be some weird ones, and I can't think of a good example off the top of my head, but there's going to be like some weird categories like get to this area as fast as you can and throw a chicken off a cliff. Like, it's going to be stuff like that they come up with to run that will take them through areas of the game that you don't see in normal speed runs and force them to use different tricks. And
right.
I'm curious as to what those forms of the category you're going to be.
I really hope we get a Korok damage only run where you have to use a Korok to damage enemies, because you can use Koroks as weapons in this.
Oh, I bet there's gonna be some sort of Korok category.
So I spin them around or something?
No, so like I literally just used Ultra Hand to pick one up, and I dropped it and I crushed one of the Peblites, and I've killed Keese. I've killed Stalfos just by
just dropping a Korok?
Dropping a Korok from an up height, and it does impact damage.
Incredible.
I actually wouldn't be shocked if there ended up being
a Korok category.
A Korok category of like all the I need to reach my friends, like get them all to their friends. Because I could see that being a really fun vehicle category where you have to build some sort of mechanism that can traverse all of these environments and get the Koroks to their friends. I don't know.
I just did the one where there's one on the beach and he's like, my friend's on that island over there, help me. And I just built like the worst boat. I was just like, let's get this over with quickly. I had already done everything on Eventide Island. So I put the Korok on the boat and just started going out there. And like, we just started like there was a lot of water and it just like slowly went backwards. And he like drowned, and I was just like, oops, and just warped out.
I did something similar with the one that's up on the hill of Hateno Village.
Yes.
There's one up there, and I put him on the little cart and attached him, and then I went to go attach the steering wheel so I could drive it, and it rolled down the hill without me, and I just saw him going very Looney Tunes back and forth throughout the hill, and then eventually he made it to the bottom but went into the water, and so I paraglided down. I was like, where is he? And then he's just out being carried by the tide next to this Octorok, and I'm like, oh, well, recall? And it's just, so he's had to relive the torture.
This year I decided I actually wanted to like follow hockey a little bit more than just the most casual of casuals. So I subscribed to a service that streams all of the NHL to your television. The Boston Bruins home opener, I went to watch it and boom, blackout restrictions apply, which I thought was kind of ridiculous because I'm still 200 miles away from Boston, but whatever. Had I had NordVPN, that wouldn't have been a problem. I would have just gone in, changed my settings to another geographic area, and boom, I could have been watching all the Boston Bruins home games like it was nothing at all. So now I have NordVPN, and I can watch the home games of my local teams streaming without being frustrated. It's the same thing with like Netflix. It has all these complicated licensing rules, which from one country to another don't really make sense. So something you could watch on South Korean Netflix, you won't be able to watch on the United States Netflix unless NordVPN, boom, switch to South Korea, and you're watching whatever Korean drama that you want. I highly recommend you do that. I haven't done it myself, but people seem to enjoy them. And who am I to try to bring down people's enjoyment? NordVPN, more than just entertainment and sports availability, it's going to protect you, especially when you're traveling, when you're using public Wi-Fi. People are trying to get in there. They're creeping on you. Bad actors, people trying to steal your password, your bank account details. Who knows what the government's doing these days? I can't keep track. They're all over the damn place. NordVPN. It's going to protect you. It's going to protect up to 6 devices, because I know you have at least that many devices in front of you right now that can hook up to the internet. Boom. Fastest VPN in the world. You're not going to get any buffering. You're not going to get any lagging. It's going to stop your ISP from bandwidth throttling, which they do. That's kind of sneaky, especially how much you're paying those guys. There's threat protection to protect you from viruses and malicious malware and whatever else unsavory actors are out there. If you want to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. That's nordvpn.com/NintendoVC. Victor Charlie. That link is also going to give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There is no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nice of them, and I appreciate that.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Here's what I will say about difficulty. Something I think this game does really well with difficulty is I mentioned you can kind of grind your way past a lot of it, which is true, but and I won't go into specifics here, but I think the boss designs are really impressive in this game.
Yeah.
Because they all, you can kill them way quicker if you have crazy powerful weapons, but they are all designed in such a way where that having a crazy powerful weapon alone will not win you the fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to do something to get in to hit them, actually. And then once you hit them a couple times, they do run back away, right? Or they'll reset or, you know, whatever that may be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so it limits the sort of... it limits how much you can just sort of ignore the boss, which I think was a little bit more of a thing with the Blight Ganons. You know, the Blight Ganons all had 2 phases or whatever, but you could also just hit them really, really hard and they would die, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that was actually kind of what I wanted to bring up is, like, I had a very, very early experience. I went up to, like, Rito Village first when I started playing, and I ended up in the Heber Mountains, and I went, and there's a stable up there with a side quest that requires you to get a horse from the other side of a field that a Gleok is flying around in. And I could not see the horse. I didn't know where the horse was. I looked at that Gleok. I went out there. I was like, all right, well, let's just see what I can do. And so I have, you know, my little wooden spear. Like, you know, I've done, like, nothing in this game so far. And it, of course, absolutely demolished me. I did like a piddly little sliver of damage to it, and then it immediately nuked me with 1 ice blast. Miserable. So that Gleok has been on my radar since I started this game.
You just reminded me I have to go back and kill that thing.
This jerkwad, I'm gonna go back and get him. So I finally decided, all right, I've cleared 3 dungeons. I've got an arsenal of powerful weapons. I'm much better at this game now. We're gonna give it a shot.
Right.
So I went back there, and it was hard. Like it was a significantly difficult fight. I was like hiding under this big stone arch. I was like, all right, I need to hit his eyes. They keep moving. Shoot, what's going on? And then he has like this final phase where he does this completely different move, and there's it's all this stuff. Mm-hmm. But I did it. I killed him, and it was in this really cool epic way where I was like up in the sky and I went into bullet time and I fired on all 3 eyes at once.
Oh, that's the best.
And then like he was in the sky, and then he landed, and the fall damage did the last little chunk of his health, and then I landed right in front of him with my little companions. And he burst into smoke, and I got a little. It was like anime, but
the music is awesome.
Oh,
in those
great
fights, by the way.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I did it, and now I'm like, okay, now I know how to do this.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I immediately went to the one on the bridge and just demolished him in like a minute because I knew how to do it. And
yeah,
so
once I cracked the I started hunting Gleoks once I got like nasty at killing one or two of them.
It's a puzzle.
Yeah, and so I forgot about that ice one, and he probably is happy I did because I'm gonna
go get him.
Yeah, after the show I'm gonna go murder him.
There's a lightning one on a cliff. I'm gonna go take care of.
I wrecked him.
So I haven't fought any of them yet. I'm saving them for like kind of my greatest hits, like end run of the game.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm just gonna kill all the Gleoks in one kind of run. Do they respawn with the Blood Moons as well?
They respawn eventually. I don't know if it's with the Blood Moons, but they do come back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
I agree about the... Once you crack the code, Gleoks can become a lot easier, right?
Yeah.
It's funny because I actually think probably Silver Lynels are still the hardest fight for me in this game. Like the parrying, obviously, you can get really good at, but that is harder to me to master than killing Gleoks. And I won't like just tell people how to do it, but I will say if you're having a lot of trouble killing Gleoks, Keese eyeballs exist.
Yeah.
Keese eyeballs are your friend.
You probably have a lot of elemental ones in your inventory that you've forgotten about.
Yeah, there's. It's not just Keese eyeballs, right? It's the Arakuta eyeballs. It's the elemental ones. They all do the same thing. They auto-target the head. They make it way easier.
The elemental ones are especially good for the Gleok fights because you can use like ice on fire. And
yeah.
And I'm just, you know, predicting that this probably works well, but if you grab like the Forest Dweller's bow or a Lynel bow, any bow that shoots multiple arrows at once, when you attach an item to it, it still only consumes one item, but it attaches it to all three.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And the multiple arrows, that's actually, it's another really good tip for Gleoks because the multiple arrows will split to different heads.
Right.
So like if one arrow, you can take out, you can often take out two heads in one or two shots if you have a strong enough bow. And so the good thing about that is that it interrupts their attacks. And so you have less time running away from them, basically.
I'm hoping like by the time I go to fight them, I'll have enough hearts to where my Demon King's bow is so strong that I can just basically one or two shot the Gleoks. That is my goal.
That is not going to happen.
Yeah.
they have way more health than that.
They do have a lot of health.
But it will be very strong. The Demon King bow is really good. So,
Reb, we ran a story on IGN this week about sort of like a secret leveling system in Tears of the Kingdom. People are finding that it is tangibly becoming more difficult as the game progresses.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that, because I think that people didn't really know about this, and it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, so this is actually in Breath of the Wild as well. I'm not sure if the systems are exactly the same between the games, or if Tears of the Kingdoms has tweaks. But yeah, Link basically has an invisible experience bar that you can't see. And whenever you defeat an enemy or a boss, I think there might be some other things that affect it, he gets experience. And as he levels up, the world levels up with him. So basically, when you start out the game, you're mostly seeing like little red bokoblins, really basic monsters. But the more of them you defeat and the more things you experience in the game, the more the world levels up around Link and the more he levels up, and you'll start seeing in those same places blue bokoblins and silver bokoblins and harder enemies, and you'll also tend to get better
equipment
from... some things are fixed, obviously, but like certain objects that they drop will be better weapons and things like that. So the game is basically calculating how much experience you have at fighting and being in it, and then scaling to meet your increasing experience level as you play.
That's awesome, because I know that like when I'm like 100 hours in now, and when I pick up a stick, it's by accident.
Yeah,
you know, I'm like, I don't need this. Like, I don't want this garbage anymore. Or like you know, you fight like a very low level enemy and it drops something. You're like, what am I going to even do with this? Like, like the bokoblin shield or something, like this junky piece of wood. I'm like,
I get weirdly excited when I see just like a single red bokoblin walking by now. I'm like, oh, look at that poor little guy.
Yeah, they're all priced out of the market. It's terrible out there.
I can't remember the last time I've seen a red bokoblin now. Like, my world is filled with black and silver bokoblins, and they deal like 8 or 9 hearts per worth of damage per hit now.
So Jada, you were telling me this in the office a couple weeks ago. You accidentally early on triggered an event that changed the game world for you permanently.
Yes. So I was helping on the wikis doing some boss guides, and one of the Phantom Ganon fights, which, you know, after you deal with the Gloom Hands, Phantom Ganon appears. There was one of them below the castle, so I went to check what type of spawn it was, killed it. And then I was like, let's a little bit deeper. Let's see. Let's just keep going. And as I'm going through, I'm like, oh, these are new enemies I've never seen before. I'm not going to spoil which ones they are. I was like, but took them out. Okay, it's fine. I was like, let's go a little bit further. Let's just see. But, you know, curiosity just really had me. I get down and there's this cliff. I jump off this cliff, land down below, massive cutscene triggers. And then I'm embroiled in this big old fight with tons and tons of enemies, waves and waves of enemies. And then a boss spawns, and I end up dying to the boss because I was down there with no gloom resistance. I only had like, I think, 10 hearts at the time.
Oh, wow.
And so I get to this boss and I'm like, oh, cool. Well, I don't have anything to recover these gloom hearts. So I only have like really 4 hearts for this boss fight. Boss dies. I respawn, go back up to the world. And then I was like, let me go, you know, make some progress in the Elden region and do the Fire Temple finally. Because at this point, I've only done the Water Temple. That's it.
Right.
And so I go to the Elden region, and there is one of those boss moblins walking around with the horns and a little army of like 7 silver bokoblins. Oh, no. And I was just like, what did I do? And now, like I said, I don't remember the last time I've seen a red bokoblin. My world is now filled with black and silver bokoblins everywhere. And I think it's because I triggered what I'm pretty sure is like the end of the game boss fight.
Right.
Well, it could also, based on the experience system, it could also just be that you killed enough stuff to like,
and I did
hyper level you.
And I did kill a lot of things down there.
Right.
So. It's important to point out right now that Jada is extraordinarily good at video games.
Yeah, like, she is.
Just nasty at video games. Like we hoist you up every time somebody is just like, people that in the game journalists are bad at games. We're like, oh, Jada, you take this one.
Like Jada, we go show them what.
Have you seen all of her platinum trophies?
Yeah.
Go watch her Resident Evil 4 shooting gallery video. I was like, Jada, can you come over and get my medals for me?
I'm well,
like,
you bring your Xbox into the office. I'll do it for you. So like my world is so like I know I said that I feel Breath of the Wild feels a little bit tougher than Tears of the Kingdom, but like after flipping that switch, it's now feeling like it's like kind of more on parity, if not a little bit harder.
That's awesome.
Which is good. I'm really enjoying it. Like I wasn't a big fan of Breath of the Wild and I'm loving Tears of the Kingdom. So like I love that this dynamic is pulling me even deeper into the game. And I do not know how I'm going to balance the time with it and Street Fighter, because if I took 2 days off from Street Fighter to play Zelda and make some progress. And then Mitchell beat me up for it. Like, he'd be in Street Fighter, but I mean, he beat me up for it.
So. I mean, the other person at IGN like really who's incredibly good at video games is Mitchell.
Yes. Maybe don't do what I did unless you want the extra challenge.
But sounds like a fun thing on the second playthrough, though. Like, when I go and replay this game in a couple years.
Immediately just drop down.
Yeah, just go down there, get everybody mad, come back up, whip them into a frenzy, and start kicking butt.
I honestly kind of want to go back down and kill a bunch more and just see how far I can warp my world to make it as dark as possible.
He's got to keep hitting that beehive, huh?
Yeah. You know, and then you get stung once, you know, shame on me, get stung 100 times. You know, I probably wanted it. It became a fetish. I don't know.
Now, one of the things you can do to make the game a little easier, or I guess tougher too, this, you know, set your own rules there, is outfit yourself with different armor sets. One of my favorite things about this game, which is really, really interesting, and Breath of the Wild had it as well, is getting to deck yourself out in a bunch of different outfits, leveling them up, getting set bonuses for them. Classic Zelda games basically just had like a green tunic, right? And then maybe a blue one and a red one, and eventually like a Zora thing and a Goron thing and stuff like that. But there are so many different combinations and so many different armor sets in this game. So what are we rocking? Reb, let's start with you.
So I have a like surface outfit and a depths outfit. My surface outfit is fairly generic. It's the traveler's tunic, traveler's hood. And then I wanted to get the three set, but the pants weren't available or I couldn't afford them really early on.
Oh, right.
And so I'm just wearing like the trousers of time or something. And I've dyed the whole outfit white.
Awesome.
I look like a white knight kind of thing.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah,
great. Because I know that some of them most of the armor sets you can go to that fabric shop in Hatino Village
and dye
them. And that's where you also switch out your gliders and stuff like that. But some of them, like the really special ones, like some of the ones tied to amiibos or
treasure
chests.
Yeah, you can't dye the trousers of time. They're already white, but you can't. But I dyed the other two to match them. And I've got them like super upgraded and stuff. So they give me really good armor. But anytime I go to the depths, I have the full miner's suit. Mm. And if you don't have the miner pieces, you should get them.
Right.
Because they're amazing for the depths. They glow in the dark. And when you have all three pieces, you cast like a big sphere of light around yourself. So you can see where you're going really well. But then you get a little extra bonus where as you're running along, you leave little puddles of like glowy stuff behind you.
Yeah.
And so you can kind of turn around and see where you've been and it's all lit up behind you. And I've upgraded that suit a couple times. It's a little hard to upgrade. I didn't realize you needed like the glow fireflies. And so they run away when you run at them and I haven't really been grabbing
them. It's a lot of crouching and tiptoeing.
Now I'm hunting them to upgrade it. But yeah, it's a really good set. And also you look like a real dork in it.
It feels raver inspired
a little
like,
bit.
They're like Jenkos that you wear.
I saw someone doing a TikTok with like skateboarding tricks in Tears of the Kingdom, and they were just wearing the miner's pants. It was really funny.
Sounds right.
Yeah, but it's a great outfit. I freaking love it.
Tom, what are you rocking, or what were you rocking?
Link's Awakening hat and nothing else.
What do you mean?
Yeah.
Like,
that's good.
Okay.
You've seen it, the mask.
Yeah, I haven't seen nothing else.
That's how I killed Gleox for a little while, was just that and no shirt or pants.
Naked with a helmet. They must be so confused.
Yeah.
That, like, who is this boy?
Like, I'm not kidding. That's how I fought Gleox. It was a power play. It was a show of dominance.
It's a whole nother meaning to naked and afraid.
Like, yeah. I wore the Link's Awakening mask a lot, but then I realized that he doesn't emote in cutscenes.
Oh.
And so, like, he's just stoic and goofy and has just, like, this very dumb look on his face.
Yeah, I don't have that hat yet. I haven't found it.
I'm not going to lie. It's really hard to find.
Yeah.
Or it's pretty... It's maybe not really hard, but it's very well hidden. It's
interesting.
It's, and again, I will not spoil anything. It is behind a puzzle that you, I mean, you can get it from the amiibo, I guess, which I didn't know pre-launch, but when I found it pre-launch, I was amazed because it is behind a puzzle you would never figure out unless you were told about the puzzle.
Right.
So I believe there's a quest line around it, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And unless you either stumble upon kind of the quest line mid-go or follow it, you will not just like accidentally find it in
a
cave.
I'm actually a little, and this is a PSA, it's probably late in the game for some of you, but if you have FOMO about the amiibo stuff and not being able to do them because like the Link's Awakening amiibo is rare and some of them are expensive or out of print, some of those amiibo drops actually like made the game a little worse for me because they doubled the reward I got for like a big deep, crazy, or tough quest. And so doing all of that would just give me something that I got just from scanning an amiibo. And it was kind of like a, that sort of took the fun away.
Honestly, I was surprised that you could get that stuff from amiibos at all because it's all in the game now, as far as I understand it. So it is just sort of like... It feels like those Assassin's Creed microtransactions where you're just like, all my map is unlocked now. And it's like, but I wanted to do that. I wanted to go get that thing, right? It doesn't have much appeal to me either. And I think I used one just to see what it was like during the review, right? Just
right.
to like check what it was. And I didn't get anything substantial out of it, right? Mm-hmm. Armor set, I feel like most of the time I am wearing the Zonai outfit, which is the one that you kind of get in different sky islands, and it extends your battery life.
I don't have that
just
one.
Just got the pants for that the other day.
It's kind of trickily hidden. Each of those ones are a little trickily hidden, and they're very useful if you don't have much battery because it just makes everything take less battery, basically.
I feel like I haven't spent nearly enough time in the sky.
Yeah same. Yeah. I'm having this is a tangent, but I'm having a surprisingly hard time getting up there. This is gonna like spark people going, oh, just do this. Yes,
just use the
know
towers, Reb.
I understand,
obviously done. Yes.
I understand functionally how to get up to the sky. There's a bunch of different ways to do it, recalling the rocks, using the towers, warping to a shrine you've already been to up there, what machines, all the different kinds of ways. But like I find that this is like one of the few areas I get frustrated with, actually, is I see an island that I want to go to.
Right.
And it ends up, because I've been to like a lot of the ones that are easier to get to, it ends up being something that's higher up or a little bit more challenging. And I build a machine or I do something and then it doesn't quite work. And I like fall short and I miss. And then I'm like all the way down on the ground and I got to like start over and rebuild the thing and try again. And then maybe that doesn't work. And it's just kind of butts sometimes, like trying to get something specific to work.
I really liked the clearing the kind of fog of war in the depths, and I love the towers in Hyrule.
It's not a similar
thing. The sky is kind of like disparate and disconnected, and it doesn't have like that. It's missing that like, oh, you're completing this.
Yeah, I don't remember where I've been up there.
Me
like,
too.
The ones that have shrines and little gacha machines on them, I remember, but some of the islands don't have anything like that on them, and so I'm like, I don't know if I've done that or not.
But anyway, quick tangent. Jada, what are you rocking?
So I have not upgraded any of my armor sets yet because I have not done the Wind Temple and all the Rito Village stuff and bringing the band back together to where.
Oh yeah.
I haven't done any of that yet.
Yeah, do the Great Fairy quest.
Oh, I know. It's just
Stable Trotters.
I think I committed to doing the Wind Temple and Rito Village last, just because they want me to go there first. So I'm a contrarian.
Funny.
So I'm just doing that last for no good reason. So I typically am rocking Soldier Helm, Fierce Deity Armor.
Ooh,
that I found in one of the quest lines, and then soldier boots when I'm like doing any type of like trickier fights.
Right.
But a lot of the time I am running around in either the glow in the dark outfit that has like the skeleton bones that I dyed bright pink.
Excuse
Love
me.
It.
Excuse me, the what?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
From the first game too.
From the first game.
Yeah.
It's like the glowstone armor.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Another Raver costume.
Yes, so I do that. I dyed it bright pink because the bones are then teal, which is my favorite color.
Yeah.
So, like, I was like, this is great. It totally looks terrible, but I love it. Or I'm rocking the Sheik's mask from one of the amiibos, as well as the Sheikah armor for the stealth, so I can collect all the bugs that I know I'm going to need.
Oh, I didn't realize it worked. Like, I was like, where do you use stealth in this game? Yep. It's like that.
Yep. So that's how why I have so many, like,
that would have helped me a lot because I'm rocking the barbarian armor, which I love. It's awesome. It's super strong. Maxing it out is really difficult this time around because for the final phase, you need these, forget what they're called. They're like these blue beetles, and they only appear at night, and they only appear on trees, and they don't show up in the rain, and you can't feed them after midnight or whatever.
Animal Crossing.
Yeah, oh my God, it extremely feels like Animal Crossing because, like, I went to the place I found to farm them was right outside of Hutino Village, the laboratory up on that cliff. There's like a small wooded area down there, and you can set your so that guy who lives, that scientist who lives in that lab up there, I forget his name.
Robbie.
Thank you. He's got this little, like, robot on his desk that you can buy photos from. And so I dumped all my money into that to get photos of every single thing in the game. So every enemy, every weapon, every mineral, vitamin, ore, animal, and stuff like that. So you can set your shrine sensor to the beetles, and it will beep when you're close to them. And so I spent probably 4 hours just, like, running back and forth between midnight and 3 a.m. and then going back to the thing or going to a campfire and restarting until I found all of them and then traded them all in. And now my armor is just incredibly tough. Quick PSA, and this is not a spoiler.
Oh, yes.
But the Master Sword is back, and it's one of the most breathtaking sequences that they've ever done in terms of unlocking it. It might be my favorite.
It is
actually
my favorite. It's the best Master Sword ever.
Dress well for it. Don't dress like the town fool. I was dressed with the climbing gear and a Harblin mask because, like, my kid told me to put it on, and I was like running around the world, and that all of a sudden just triggered the Master Quest line. It's beautiful and breathtaking and important. Look good for it, Jada. You saved the game and then reloaded.
I was like, this is not cool enough for this moment. This moment is too momentous. It's so amazing. I was like, reload the save. I will come back when I have more outfits that are colored and dyed and into a photo shoot. I'm going to do so many photo shoots.
Yeah.
You'll know when it's coming.
You can, I think, stumble upon it by accident, but you're not just going to, Link's not just going to be walking along and he's going to trip over the Master Sword. You will see it before.
Yeah. Don't wear the Harblin mask and the climbing gear outfit.
If you see a Master Sword, put on some nice clothes. Show it respect.
Exactly. Well, that's about all the time we have left for this week's episode of Talk of the Kingdom. Be sure to come back every single Thursday as we skydive into gameplay tips, tricks, secrets, and adventure stories as we explore the vast world above and below and in the middle of Hyrule. It's a wonderful sandwich. The game is out in the wild. I'm so glad people are talking about it and playing it. Talk of the Kingdom will be available on IGN, YouTube, all of your favorite podcast platforms. If you're watching on YouTube, leave us a like and a nice comment. If you're listening to us on a podcast app, please leave us a review. Don't forget to follow Nintendo Voice Chat on Twitter. If you want a cool Tears of the Kingdom or Zelda shirt, like the one Reb's rocking right now,
Death Mountain.
Hell yeah. Go check out the IGN store. There's tons of awesome gear on there right now. And thank you so much for watching and listening to Talk of the Kingdom, and we will see you next week. Remember, the NVC, Talk of the Kingdom, is the only place, I promise you, where you can
Get the tingle!
It hurts every time.
Hello, dear stranger. I'd like to introduce you to something new. Or perhaps something very, very old. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine is a horror fantasy medical mystery following the titular monk turned traveling medical investigator. Follow Radolf as he navigates a nightmare world in which viruses are gods, and the human race are not their favored children. Steeped in history and an aesthetic that can only be described as a combination of occult academia and laboratory Judaica, the Heresies of Radolf Burntwine have been described as Umberto Eco meets H.P. Lovecraft. For more information, check out the Patreon at thorb.info. But take care, dear stranger, for some truths are best left unknown.